So we find that there's one for this for the Schwarzschild horizon, which we can write as this indeed on shell that reduces just to this value R horizon, which is the same as the square root of this PC naught. We can also find another Dirac observer, which is, for example, C times PC, that is also that also commutes with a Hamiltonian constraint, and on shell that is just the product of these initial values. In principle, you can find also different Dirac observers, so here's some freedom and choose the second one, that does not change the analysis here. And what we observe is that only this R horizon is physical. So once we fix the value of this Dirac observable R horizon, we saw on the previous slides here, that then our metric is fully determined and everything is fixed. While it's completely independent what we do with this D. So we could give this different values, but the physical metric won't be affected by this. So this plays actually no physical role. And we see this by two facts. The one is that it just does not appear in the metric, so it cannot have any physical relevance. But we also see that if you study how this C and this PC scale with the fiducial structure, you see that this product just scales linear with rescalings of this fiducial length. So this value of D is actually dependent on which fiducial cell we chose. So also that tells us this D cannot really be a physical quantity as it depends on this fiducial structure. And we can explain this mismatch of having two Dirac observers, which are by definition gauge independent, but only one of them being actually relevant in the physical metric, or we can actually get rid of one of them by just doing a coordinate transformation, so gauge transformation. And we can explain this by residual diffeomorphisms. And what we observe is that to get rid of this D, we did this coordinate transformation. So we just rescaled the X coordinate by a constant. And what we see is that this A bar, which is the quantity appearing in the metric I introduced on the first slide, that this actually picks up just the same factor here, just inverse. So we see that this A bar is sensitive to that coordinate transformation. But if we study the quantity which appears in our Hamiltonian, which is this A here, so this integrated the integrated A bar over the fiducial cell, we see that if we change the coordinates, that then the fiducial cell becomes rescaled, but also this A becomes rescaled, and they become rescaled exactly in a way that the product is the same. So the coordinate transformation, which rescales just the X coordinate, is the identity on the phase space. So this transformation is simply not present in the phase space. So our canonical Dirac observers can also not know about this transformation. So there's no generator for any transformation of this kind, as it is on the phase space the identity. So Dirac observers cannot see that they are independent with regard of this remaining degree of freedom. But what we see is that the physical metric is actually affected. This is what we see here. So we can actually get rid of additional degrees of freedom here. We can furthermore conclude that in a different way, that essentially we introduced this fiducial cell, and just the introduction of this fiducial cell gave us these residual diffeomorphisms or gave us so just integrating here the quantities over the fiducial cell, that led to these residual diffeomorphisms being the identity on the phase space. And that means these residual diffeomorphisms are actually not present on the phase space, but we can still see that quantities are sensitive to these transformations through the fiducial cell dependence. So this A on the slides before was dependent, linearly dependent on this L naught, and that reflects that it's actually a quantity which was integrated over the fiducial cell and hence is sensitive to these residual diffeomorphisms.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask a question or make a remark. Because you're thinking about these residual diffeomorphisms passively in terms of changes of coordinates and you're rescaling the cell at the same time, that's what's making it the identity on the phase space. But for example, if you were to fix, you know, the cell is really a background structure, and you could, if you leave that fixed and you only do the coordinate transformation, you will see an effect on the phase space. And of course, there's an active version of this transformation, which is, of course, an actual diffeomorphism. If you think of it in terms of that, you will see that the action on the phase space is non-trivial. It's just not canonical. So it's just a remark. I don't know if you want to respond to that.
Yes. That is partially true, in the sense that this L naught is actually the size of the fiducial cell in the T in the T chart. In the X chart. So L naught is the size of the fiducial cell in this X chart. So if we keep this L naught finite, if these are not constant in the X chart, it will change in the Y chart. And so the fiducial, the physical size of fiducial cell does not change in this consideration here. But you're right, you can also ask, like, just rescale the fiducial cell, just make it double as large or something. That will be non-trivial on the phase space. So that will map this this A to twice A. But this is also not a canonical transformation, as you just said.
Or you could think of it the other way. You could keep the cell fixed and do a coordinate transformation. Because usually, the passive version of diffeomorphisms is usually considered to be coordinate transformations. And there's no real reason to scale the cell at the same time. And that way you would also get a non-trivial action on the phase space. But it would be non-canonical.
Yes, but actually here we do not scale the cell. This L naught is the size of the fiducial cell in X coordinate. And we keep the size of the fiducial cell in X coordinate fixed. So that's why we introduce here this quantity. This curly L naught that remains the same if we change the coordinates. While the value of this L naught here, that will change in the different coordinates, but this here will be the same. So we do not rescale the physical size of the fiducial cell. But of course, the appearance of the fiducial cell in different coordinate changes then.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
it's a little bit subtle, I have to agree. We can maybe discuss later a little bit more.
Sure.
Okay. So this transformation was not present on the phase space, but we can still see that quantities are sensitive to this residual diffeomorphisms by having L naught dependence having an L naught dependence. So if we rescale the fiducial cell by a factor 2, for example, this A, but also this Dirac observer D will just rescale by a factor of 2. But once we go back to the metric, the metric is actually sensitive to that transformation, and this we can use to get rid of this Dirac observable D by use of this coordinate rescale. So the conclusion here is that there are actually two Dirac observables on the classical phase space, but only one of them is physically relevant. And we got rid of one of them by just rescaling our coordinates, and that absorbs one Dirac observable. And the physical Dirac observer we can identify as essentially being the Schwarzschild horizon, which is in the classical setting the same as just twice the black hole mass. And with this comes now a warning, because what you could think of is to construct a polymer quantum theory or an effective theory of the black hole, and then evaluate your solution somewhere in the classical regime and fix your integration constant of the quantum theory by means of the integration constant you fix in the classical theory. But as we have seen in the classical theory, there is ambiguity in fixing the integration constant, as this one Dirac observable is actually completely arbitrary. So if you just match these two somewhere in a classical regime, you map this arbitrariness of the classical theory into the quantum theory. So you have to be really careful here in the case that the second Dirac observable in the quantum theory is actually physically relevant. And that is exactly what we see in, or what we saw in our previous paper and in also in previous work. And that is what these examples I want to show you in the next slides. So in February this year, we published a model for a polymer model of black holes where we introduced these VP variables. They have this relation, so this V2, V1, P2, and P1, and they have this relation to the variables to the connection variables. And you can now do this canonic transformation, derive the Hamiltonian, and so on. And then we went to the effective polymer theory by just polymerizing these momenta P by just mapping them into the sign. And we kept the polymerization scales, we kept constant. And this theory we ended up with is actually analytically solvable. And what we get then for this B and the A are exactly these rather complicated expressions, which are again not relevant for the following. But what we observe here is, again, as expected, we have two phase-based, non-trivial phase-based degrees of freedom, which reflects that we have two integration constants, this D and the C, appearing here and here. But what we see here is now that the R coordinate appears in this non-trivial square root or this square root combination. So if we just rescale the R coordinate, we cannot absorb the C or the D, or also not a global factor will get rid of, or just multiplying by a global factor, this A will not help us to get rid of this C and D here. So we see that in this metric, there actually both integration constants C and D appear, and we cannot just rescale the R coordinate to get rid of one, say the D. And as they are both, now, as they both appear in the physical metric, they should have both physical meaning, and indeed, we can interpret them. And for that,
Can I ask a question on the previous slide?
Yes, of course.
So I'm just confused with the various variables here. So, like, what is the physical interpretation of B in your model? Like, I know, like, you call them B and V variables, but I'm just confused whether they have the same interpretation as in loop quantum cosmology.
The interpretation is a little bit subtle and not completely relevant here. But this V2, for example, measures somehow is like the aerial radius cubed. The V1 is actually the aerial radius cubed. This V2 is related to the A appearing the metric.
Aram, this is Norbert. Let maybe make a clarifying comment. So you may be misunderstanding the VB variables in the title with this slide here. So the B on this slide, this is a standard B, which is conjugate to PB in standard connection variables. The VB variables that we find, which have a kind of conceptual relation to the VB variables of loop quantum cosmology, will be discussed in the next part of the talk by Fabio. So this B here is the standard B from spherically symmetric connection variables.
Okay, so B is just canonically conjugate to PB.
Exactly.
And so what is the physical interpretation of P1 and P2?
As Johannes said, that is actually not relevant for this slide. I mean, you can read it off from the equations if you want. But
no, maybe it is not relevant in your discussion, but I'm just confused that P1 is entering in C, and then P1 is being polymerized rather than C being polymerized. So I think it is probably going to be relevant later on. Generally in loop quantum cosmology, when we write C and when we have this phase space of PB and B and PC and C, the standard way or the heuristic way to obtain the effective dynamics is to polymerize connection and Bs. On the other hand, you are polymerizing only part of C. So
yes, so the original goal of this work, of these variables that you see here, which was not completely achieved in those variables, was to polymerize something that makes physical sense to polymerize in a mu naught scheme, meaning that you would like to polymerize something that is on shell related to a curvature scalar that you would expect to be large once quantum effects
become exactly large. That's the point I was coming to. Yes. So it seems to me that so that you have chosen to polymerize only that part of C which directly leads you to the bounds on Creshman scalar and so on.
Yes. So what one can probably say here is that these are almost curvature scalars.
Okay. So if just to summarize, the only that part of C is being polymerized, which immediately leads to the a bound on Creshman scalar.
Exactly. But this is not quite true on this slide, but it will be true in the next part of the talk.
But that's, I think, like we have to remember this, right? Like in various models, as since you were mentioning that there are various problems in all the models and so forth, we have to keep this in mind that in none of the models previously, except in probably one paper of Leonardo Modesto, people didn't make such a choice. People were working with Ostreger-Barbero connection in their symmetry reduced version and then only working with the polymerization of the connections C or B. We were not making particular choices of what part of the connection should be polymerized such that we are getting a bound on Creshman scalar, because then one is going away from the approach of loop quantum gravity. We are trying to polymerize something without any motivation coming from loop quantum gravity.
Yes, I mean, I have to agree with that statement. So the aim of this work was to try to construct a model that is physically viable. And that's why...
No, but you agree, right? Like we agree that this model is not philosophically based as coming from loop quantum gravity, in the sense that the polymerization is not done of the connection and...
It is not philosophically based on a model of loop quantum gravity that would itself be built on Ostreger variables. If you would build loop quantum...
I agree with that.
If you would build loop quantum gravity with variables that are similar to those, then it would be the same analog as...
But we have to then go back and derive everything from scratch. Like yeah. Right now we are using Ostreger-Barbero variables to come to a classical phase space, then doing a symmetry reduction, then choosing a part of that connection to polymerize. So I that can be one model, but I think like we agree right now, like we are doing a construction in a very particular fashion, a very peculiar construction is happening here.
Yes, I completely agree. I mean, the idea of this construction, again, to say it was find variables that would lead to physically sensible dynamics, where physically sensible means that quantum effects should be present once curvature scalars are large.
Shall we continue?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we have seen that we cannot do a coordinate transformation to get rid of one of these C or D integration constants here. That means we have to interpret what do they actually mean. And for that, we can write down the following, or we can write down two Dirac observables, which is this FQ and this FQ bar. I did not state their phase-based dependence now explicitly here, but on shell, they reduce to these combinations of C and D. And we see that both of them have physical meaning, and we can interpret them by studying the asymptotic regions in our space-time. And our space-time looks, so the Penrose diagram is this one. So it's an infinite tower of these single Schwarzschild black hole, or it looks similar to the Schwarzschild black hole, this one diagram, and then you glue infinitely many on top of each other. And then we study the asymptotic regions, and taking the limit for r going to plus infinity means we are somewhere here in region one here. And then we find that this region one is actually described by exactly this metric, which looks like, or which is actually the Schwarzschild metric with a Schwarzschild with the black hole mass or twice the black hole mass being FQ. We can do the same thing for r going to minus infinity. That means we go here through the interior of the black and the white hole, and then we end up in region three here. And again, then we find exactly the same line element just with FQ bar here. So we interpret this FQ bar as just twice the mass of the white hole here. And so these two have both physically relevant interpretation here. And you can also change the viewpoints here. So you could construct combinations of M black hole and M white hole, which probably is quite complicated. And for example, you could evaluate the Kretschmann scalar at some given error radius, some initial error radius somewhere here in region one, and fix this, fix the value here, which is essentially up to quantum corrections would then fix the value of the black hole mass. And what you can also do is to fix the value of, let's say, in principle, any other curvature scalar. Let's say we take here the Ricci scalar, and also fix the value of the Ricci scalar at some initial value B here. And that is possible in the quantum theory because the Ricci scalar is zero plus order of quantum corrections. So order in these polarization scales, lambda one, lambda two. So we can fix the value of these quantum corrections somewhere here in region one in principle. And then specifying these two values fixes you uniquely the values of the two masses we have here.
Can I ask for a clarification? These are presumably ADM masses, right? So yes, they're evaluated at I naught.
Yes.
So one is in, on the I naught to the right and the other one on the I naught to the left. Is that the idea?
So this M black hole is evaluated here in I naught here and here. So region one and two describe the same, describe both the black hole region, where M white hole is the ADM mass at I naught here and here. So in some region three and four.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. We also study now if these DR observables also occur in previous models. And that is content of the paper which appeared today on archive. And for that, we studied for simplicity reasons mu naught schemes and generalized mu naught schemes as there are analytical solutions available. In principle, what I'm going to tell here is valid for. Basically all models which have essentially these equations of motions, that is true for the latest Ashikaw-Medu-Singh paper, but also for the Kurichi-Singh paper and also other papers. And similar equations are written down by Modesto, which are slightly different concerning the polarization scales here, but in principle, the equations of motion have the same functional structure. And so you can again solve these equations of motion and you find that there are again two integration constants and you can interpret them or combinations of these integration constants essentially as the size, so the area radius of the black hole and the white hole radius. And we can construct here observables which have this complicated form here. Again, the explicit expression is not relevant here, but just to show you, you can construct these, and these are on-shell. They are constant on-shell, commute with the Hamiltonian, and then fixing these values fixes you the size of the black hole and the white hole radius. And for the papers of Modesto, there was also an exterior space-time available, which was on top of that also asymptotic Schwarzschilds. So there also we can construct observables for the ADM masses on the corresponding sides, just to state this for completeness. But once you found this, you actually notice that there are now 2 degrees of freedom. So one is the size of the black hole radius, one is the size of the white hole radius. That means that gives you an additional degree of freedom, which was not observed in these previous papers here. So in principle, you could now go and revisit the arguments, so the Plaquette arguments, which were, or whatever arguments done in these quantum theories. You can revisit them and can try to check if you now get new possibilities because you have essentially 1 degree of freedom more to choose here. We can generalize this statement. So we came to the following conclusion that basically whenever you have a polynomial model where one of the polarization scales is fiducial cell dependent, that was the case for all the models I presented you so far, That is equivalent with having two physical Dirac observers. And the explanation for that is essentially, in the classical theory, we have seen that one of the Dirac observers was fiducial cell dependent. But now if we have a polymerization scale, which is also fiducial cell dependent, we can just multiply this Dirac observer with a suitable power of this polymerization scale, and the product then will not be fiducial cell dependent, and that is actually then what appears in the final metric. But
sorry, I have a question. In the previous slide, what was capital B0? In the previous slide,
I did not get this. Can you please repeat the question?
In the previous slide, when you showed the black hole and white hole horizon radius, radii, the capital B zero.
Ah, yes.
What is that? I mean, that is the difference between these two, so I would like to ask that one specifically.
Yes, so there are several constants appearing here. So there's this B naught here, so the small B naught here, which is something like square root of 1 plus delta B square times gamma square, where gamma is the emissary parameter. And this B naught here is, I don't have the explicit expression here, but it's some function of this small B naught here. So, but it is a constant for delta equal to.
Depends on the emissary parameter.
Yes, it depends on the emissary parameter.
Only or... So, I mean, okay.
There's also delta B included.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Okay. To get more confident in this, this equivalence here, we also studied another class of models where we basically have variables where the polymerization scales are both fiducial cell independent and inconsistent. So consistent with the statement here, we found that there's only one Dirac observer available. So again, one is completely irrelevant, does not appear in the final metric. And we showed that for a whole class of simple models where both polymerization scales are fiducial cell independent. That basically leads you to the following two boxes. So whenever you construct a polymer model of black holes, you have basically two options. Either you have variables where one of the polymerization scales are fiducial cell dependent, and in that case, according to this observation here, you would have two physical Dirac observers, which would correspond to the two masks, or depending on the model, maybe the two horizons. And in principle, they are both unrelated. So we can, in principle, choose they at free will. And that gives you an additional degree of, or additional freedom in actually imposing whatever quantum condition you would like to satisfy. And in previous models, there was in the model we presented, or I presented earlier, there was the quantum condition was something like we would like to have a unique upper curvature bound, and that restricted a relation between these two integration constants, between these initial conditions, that the white hole mass actually a certain function of the black hole mass. The same happens, or is expected to happen, if you do other quantum conditions, so like Plaquette arguments, or in the Modesto papers, he also did arguments coming from full loop quantum gravity. And there you also essentially indirectly fixed the relation between the white hole and the black hole mass. So you restricted the initial conditions to meet the quantum condition he imposed. So the question we was rising then for us was like, can we circumvent this? So can we find actually variables, or can we find a scheme in which we satisfy our quantum conditions, which is unique upper curvature bound, but without fixing a relation between the initial conditions. And that is the variables, which is Fabio going to talk about in a minute. The other possibility is when you construct a Putterman model of black holes is that you basically choose variables where both polarization scales are fiducial cell independent. And according to our observation, that would lead then to just having one Dirac observable. And this one Dirac observable essentially encodes both masses. So that is exactly what we found here. So we can evaluate this Dirac, or we can evaluate the metric somewhere in on the black hole side, and then can find what is the black hole mass of the system. Then we can go to the white hole side and see that actually there is a relation between the mass we get then on the white hole side, between the, so there is a relation of this mass and the previous mass we found on the black hole side. So there is again a relation of the two masses found, but now the difference is it is selected by the dynamics. So our Hamiltonian selects exactly this relation between the two masses. So there is no additional freedom here. And what we furthermore observed is that all the Hamiltonians we considered so far, all the schemes, there was a symmetry between the exchange of black hole mass and white hole mass. And if you have this symmetry, you actually find that then also this relation here has to respect the symmetry. So the symmetry is on the Hamiltonian level. That means also the dynamics has to be symmetric under this. So you have also this relation satisfies this symmetry, from which we can conclude that the only two possible relations which are compatible with fiducial cell independent polarization scales and the symmetry is either a linear relationship or an inverse relationship. And the model the class of models we discussed in our paper was actually one where the relation was inverse. Okay, with this I'm done with the part on Dirac observables. Are there further questions on the first part of the talk? Okay, seems not. So then Fabio will continue with the second part.
Hello, everybody. So now in the second part of the talk, I'm going to present you these new variables that we defined in these last two papers and try to explain why are they conceptually similar to the BV variables used in LQC, although as we will see, the interpretation is not exactly the same, and how these variables will allow you to overcome the limitation in fixing the initial condition due to the presence of the two observables we have discussed now in the first part of the talk. So to understand how to construct this variable, let's go back for a while to our previous model that Johannes was introducing in his part of the talk. So as Norbert was also mentioning in his comment, the source of the limitation is essentially the fact that one of the momenta that we were polymerizing was related to the Kretschmann scalar, but the proportionality factor was depending on one of the two integration constants. And here I stressed it in red color. So now this variable will be on shell related to the Kretschmann scalar only if this integration constant is selected to be independent of the mass. And this was actually the regime of initial condition that was selected by the mass relation that Johannes was talking about. So now our idea was to try to construct a new set of variables in which one of the momenta is directly related to the Kretschmann scalar without any occurrence of the integration constant. So there are only pure numerical factor as proportionality factor. And this is the new set of variables we introduced. And the red one here is the momentum k. It's exactly the phase space expression of the Kretschmann scalar in our previous variables, of the square root of the Kretschmann scalar in our previous variables. And we kept, for simplicity, the other momenta to be, the other momentum to be exactly the same as before. And this was a simplicity choice. So this for sure will commute with the other, but as we will see later, there is still like a small dependence on initial condition because of this second momentum. And we were not able so far to find to get rid of this dependency, this other momentum. But by the way, this will not affect the our criteria for physical variability, which is quantum effect are decaying in the low curvature regime and unique curvature upper bound in the high curvature regime. But we will come back to this soon in the talk. So for the interpretation of this momentum, as I was saying, we can look actually at its expression now in terms of the metric coefficient. And what turns out is that on of shell, this can be actually related to the Meissner-Sharp mass, which is the mass enclosed into a two-sphere of area radius B. This here I'm using this Carli B to not confuse it with the B of the connection variables that were used in the first part of the talk. And now this quantity, once we go on shell, so using the solution of the equations of motion, is exactly the classical expression of the square root of the Cauchy mass scalar, with only there is a factor, an omega factor in between that is just mismatched. So this is the reason why we were thinking that these are good variables to achieve the requirement of having a curvature upper bound without no restriction on the masses, and so we'll see later. And the similarity here with BV variables of LQC is that essentially, from a conceptual point of view, also in that case, the momentum that we polymerize, which is related to the Hubble rate, is a you can relate it to the Ricci scalar, which is the, in that context, the non-trivial curvature space-time invariance that is in the game. Now here, in analogy, one of the momenta is related to the square root of the Cauchy mass scalar, which is the non-trivial curvature invariant in this black hole set. So again, we can...
Can I make a small comment on the previous slide? So just for the audience, like, you see, like, it is true that the way this B and V variables are right now being introduced, they have some similarities to B and V variables in LQC, but there is an important difference. Like in improved dynamics of LQC, one starts from the mu bar approach and C and P variables. One uses the physical areas of the loops to regularize the field strength of the Ostriger-Barbaro connection. And then one finds that B and V variables are natural choices where classically the relationship between Ricci scalar and B appears. But the difference here is that one is not doing that construction, but one is postulating that one is choosing B essentially as a variable, which is related to Creshman scalar in some way. So I think like it is true that there is an analogy, but one should state there is a caveat that the way it is approached in LQC is quite different from the way it is done here. Second, my second comment is that though I don't remember anyone using the variables the way you have used, but Christian Bohmer and Kevin Vandersloot in 2007, when they were trying to make a mu bar scheme of Kantowski stacks, they had very similar variables, except that they didn't write in terms of Creshman scalar. Then a couple of years later, like with my student, I showed that very similar variables exist again for Kantowski sacks, but we didn't write in terms of Creshman scalar. So that is the only two comments I want to make.
Yeah, thank you for this comment, especially the second. Maybe that can be related by canonical transformations, and it would be interesting to check the difference once the polymerization is performed. But here, to come back to the first comment, I agree with you. We somehow are taking inspiration from the BB variables of LQC, and now if you prefer, we are like reversing the logic. So let's start with the curvature invariant that we have at our disposal and construct variables which can be then polymerized in analogy to what is done in our community. But you are right, we are not like starting with standard connection variables and trying to polymerize in a standard way. Then of course, it's interesting to understand how these variables would be related in this context. And this is something that we would like to work out in the next future. Is there any other comment or should I continue?
Just go ahead.
Maybe I can just make a very... So, like, there was a work which I did with my student in which we looked at lots of different families of different variables possible, which satisfy the improved dynamics criteria for Kantosky sacks. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that there were very, very strong constraints on different choices possible. So I haven't studied this in the way you have studied now, like that was a long time back. But if you want, like I can send you an email that paper and you can relook at whether your variables satisfy those criteria. Because what we found was that there was, in a sense, no choice possible which was free from one problem or another. And those were the results which then motivated us back to mu naught kind of scheme, which Alex Kurici and I did, and then Javier, me and Abe followed a generalization of that. So I think it will be good to look at some of those papers which were written in 4 or 5 years ago and see whether your variables are free from those problems.
Yes, it would be great if you send us the reference. Just let me say that here we are using a kind of mu naught scheme for these variables, but the corresponding scheme in connection variables is not a mu naught scheme anymore. It would be a sort of mu bar scheme.
Yes, so what the work which I did was, it was not just based on mu naught scheme, but all kinds of mu bar variables. Like, and in that time, if you remember, there were this lattice refinement ideas were in fashion for some people. And we showed that even if you take all those kinds of refinements possible, there are very, very strong constraints on physical viability of the variables in the sense of getting the right ultraviolet bound when single light resolution happens, getting right infrared scaling or infrared behavior at small space time curvature, and fiducial cell independence.
Okay. Yeah, we will surely look up at the reference that you sent us. Thank you for the comment. So let's continue. Now, for the classical theory of these new variables, a remarkable observation is that even if we do this canonical transformation that I have included in previous slides to define the new variable, the form of the Hamiltonian remains exactly the same as in our previous variables, and which is a remarkably simple form of the Hamiltonian where there are at maximum quadratic terms in the momenta, and there are no inverse powers of the momenta. And as we will see later in the talk, this will also allow us to perform the first step in the construction of the quantum theory up to the solution of the Hamiltonian constraint as a quantum operator. So as Johannes was mentioning in the first half of the talk, the analysis of the Yakov observable can be done in details also in this case. I will be, of course, quick on this as it was discussed in detail in the first part. But again, in the classical case, we have only one fiducial cell independent Dirac observable, which actually encodes both the integration constants which are coming from the solution of the dynamics. And we can interpret it in terms of the black hole mass by simply reconstructing the metric coefficient in terms of the phase space variables and look for the behavior of the metric that is isometric to the Schwarzschild solution, if we identify on shell this Dirac observable with the horizon Schwarzschild radius. And again, by means of a coordinate rescaling, we can reabsorb one of the integration constant, which will not enter the final expression of the metric, as Johannes was saying in the first part of the talk. So now, with the classical setting at our disposal, let's go to the effective quantum theory. And for this, again, the observation is that the interior of the black hole is essentially as the same structure of Kantosky sack cosmology, where we have a homogeneous slicing into the R direction. And we can apply these techniques, which are inspired by loop quantum cosmology, to construct the effective theory. Now, we choose to keep the structure as simple as possible. So we polymerize this momenta by means of the sine function, which of course is a choice at this point. And we can ask in principle if other choices leads to different conclusion, but this is still to be explored. And we use the constant polymerization case. And to interpret this case, let us go back to the interpretation of the momenta. So as I said before, One of them is related to the square root of the Kirschmann scalar, which means then that the polarization scale of the K sector is essentially related to an inverse curvature scale and will control the large curvature quantum effects, while the other momentum J that here I represent in its combination with the fiducial cell length that is independent of fiducial scale, fiducial cell rescaling, is essentially related to the inverse power of the aerial radius. So this, the polymerization of this other momentum will take care of small area radius quantum effects. And as I anticipated before, here there is still one integration constant appearing in the on-shell value of one of the momentum. And this will provide some small difference in some regime of the masses, as I will show in a while. And polymerizing now in this way the classical Hamiltonian, we get the following effective Hamiltonian that, because of the simple structure, can be handled quite easily, and we can solve the entire effective dynamics analytically. And here I report the final expression of the solution in terms of the metric coefficient. And again, the expression are quite involved, but I report here just for completeness. And what is important to keep in mind is listed here in this box. So first of all, the metric is the coefficient of the metric are well defined over the whole R domain to plus and minus infinity, which means that essentially we will have two asymptotic regions. And moreover, there are two horizons corresponding to the roots of the A coefficient. And in the large mass limit, we can actually rewrite the corresponding value of the area radius as the classical expression for the Schwarzschild radius, respectively in terms of black hole and white hole masses if we are in the positive R range or in the negative R range, plus quantum correction, which here is not important, is specific form for this correction, but they goes essentially to zero once we send the polymerization scale to zero. Then the area radius B reported here has also a non-zero minimal value, and this is exactly corresponding to the a space-like transistor surface, which will replace the classical singularity connecting the black hole side with the white hole side. Moreover, note here that the x we are reporting here is essentially just a combination of the R coordinate and the polymerization scale of the J sector. And in the final form of the metric, essentially this scale will not appear because it's just like a redefinition into the R coordinate. And the only relevant polymerization scale instead is the one for the momentum which was related to the Kirschmann scalar, so lambda k in this case, in these slides. And again, the initial integration constants are encoded in the true masses. So, and now both appear in the matrix, and we cannot get rid of one of them as was done instead in the classical case. So now both will have physical meaning. And as you can expect from the first part of the talk, they are there are two Dirac observables related to them, and they are respectively interpreted as the black hole and white hole masses. For completeness, here I report the expression of the phase space function for the two Dirac observables. And again, by looking at the asymptotic behavior of the metric in the plus and minus infinity regions, we get back essentially the classical Schwarzschild solution where respectively on one side the horizon radius is related to the one Dirac observable and on the other side is the other Dirac observable. But the important remark at this point is that everything up to here does not require to fix any relation between the black hole and white hole mass. So up to now, these are two independent parameters which can be freely specified. And to summarize, what is the structure of the resulting spacetime from polymerizing these variables? Here I report the Perros diagram that can be constructed by means of standard ways explicitly. And again, let me stress that the metric is defined and smooth all over the R range, so both for the interior and exterior regions. Then quantum effects become relevant in the high curvature regime, and these will resolve the classical singularity by means of a smooth transition surface between a trapped and anti-trapped region, as can be seen by calculating also the expansions for these regions. And because of the topology of the starting spacetime, we will have an infinite tower of essentially alternating trapped and anti-trapped regions, which we interpret as black hole and white holes. And asymptotically, quantum effects, so in the local virtual regime, quantum effects are negligible, and we recover sparse solution in the asymptotic regions that allows us to interpret essentially also the those Dirac observable as the asymptotic ADM black hole and white hole masses. So now we are in a position to answer our original question, so about regarding the motivation of finding these variables, which was if or not we can achieve our criteria for physical viability without restricting the masses. So our requirement was to have an upper bound in the Planck regime for the curvature invariance. And to answer this, for these variables, we studied the Kretschmann scalar at the transistor surface where it takes it its maximum value. And as you can see from the plot here on the right, essentially the Kretschmann scalar, so here is the logarithm of the Kretschmann scalar in terms of the possible values for the black hole and white hole masses on the two axes. And you can see that is all over the range of masses, this quantity is approximately constant. There is, of course, this central regions here, which is somehow special. And we were quantifying this central regions as this interval in the ratio of the masses. So when the ratio between black hole and white hole masses is between 1/8 and 8. And the reason why essentially this region is a little bit special is because of the dependence from the interaction constant in the other momentum. And this can be seen as follows. So now let's go to study what are the...
I have a question here. Do you get also similar results for other curvature scalars besides the Kretschmann scalar, like regarding the upper bounds?
For this, we don't have explicit plots here, but they should be also bounded.
Okay, thanks.
So they should be related to each other. So now studying the onset of the quantum effects coming from polymerizing the two sectors, essentially this is a way to explain why this interval between for the ratio of the two masses was a little bit special. So here I report the plots for the two polymerized momenta, and the red lines will refer to the polymerized momentum K, while the blue one is the J sector. And for the two values of the black hole and white hole masses corresponding to the two boundary of that central regions in the previous slide, so essentially the 1/8 value and the 8 value, the difference is essentially which one of the two kind of quantum effects is relevant first. And in one case, coming from the black hole side, we will first see J sector quantum effects and then K sector. While coming from the white hole side for the other value of the relation of the masses is the other way around. But in particular, this was leading us to prefer the symmetric case, so the one in which the black hole mass is equal to the white hole mass for the following reason. So in this case, it happens that both kind of quantum effects are uniquely determined by only the polymerization scale lambda k, and they both align to be large curvature quantum effects, as can be seen from this plot. Another way to see this is essentially to study the condition for the classical regime. So, and this is the following condition. So the classical expression of the Kretschmann scalar has to be much smaller of this quantity. And this comes essentially from the requirement that the argument of the sign will reproduce the classical argument far from the quantum regime. And here you see that only the lambda k scale appears. And then this is rescaled by a ratio of the two masses. And so in particular, when the two masses are equal, there is only one kind of large curvature scale, which gives us the onset of both quantum effects. And for us, this was like a way of preferring the symmetric one with respect to the other. Although, as showed for the previous slide, the square root of the Gaussian mass scalar is constant for most of the mass relations, with the only exception of this central part in which it is still constant, but with different magnitude because of this exchange of quantum effects. So now, as I said before, we can also like start to construct the quantum theory of this model. And this can be done by the standard step already available in the literature, and in particular in the context of loop quantum cosmology. And here I just sketch the main steps that should be familiar to most of you. So we choose the following value of the, for convenience, the following value of the polymerization scale. And we did the following choice for the laps in such a way that the effective Hamiltonian is a density weight two object in the non-compact T direction. And in particular, we choose the following ordering, which is the one similar to the one for the MMO prescription in loop quantum cosmology. And now the Hilbert space can be essentially spanned by the eigenstates of the operator corresponding to the V variables, Vj and Vk, which will just act as a multiplication operator. And then the exponentiated version of the momenta will act as a displacement operator. And now with the standard choice of rescaling the wave function and relabeling the variables, we arrive at the final form of the operator for the Hamiltonian constraints, which now, because of the ordering we were choosing, also in this case, it appears that the zero V eigenstate is somehow is dynamically isolated, and also the positive and negative branches of the discrete spectrum are dynamically decoupled. And moreover, as it is expected from the choice of this ordering, and now, moreover, for this explicit form of the Hamiltonian constraint, we can also explicitly write down the solution for the states which are in the kernel of this operator, and here I report it in finite form just for completeness. Of course, this is just the first step into the construction of this quantum theory, because now the next question will be about completing this theory by working out the physical scalar product, and then the physical Hilbert space, and then ask if we can actually derive the effective dynamics out of this quantum theory. And that, for that, we need to understand better the Dirac observable and look for proper coherent states to recover the effective dynamics. So this brings me to the conclusion of this talk. So let me summarize the result of both parts. So we discussed in details how Dirac observable can be provided for effective polymer models in black holes, and now the study of these observables leads to restriction on the initial condition that are available for the physical viability of the model. And then we were asking ourselves if it is possible to construct variables which are adapted in similarity to the BV variables of LQC to achieve the unique curvature upper bound in the Planckian regime, and we found such kind of variables and discussed in the second half of the talk. And the resulting picture of the quantum corrected space-time is similar to previous investigations. So again, we have the singularity resolution via a transition from black hole to white hole. And we have an upper bound on curvature and small quantum effects in the low curvature regime for all possible mass relations. And in particular, we argue that the symmetric case is preferred in terms of the onset of quantum effects. And as I showed in previous slides, the remarkably simple form of the Hamiltonian allows us to perform explicitly and analytically the first step in constructing the quantum theory. Now, as future work, we would like, as I say, to complete the quantum theory and to understand what is the role of the Dirac observables. And in particular, something that has to be understood is that these Dirac observables do not commute already at the classical level. So this would be really interesting to understand what is the role of these quantities and of their non-commutativity in the quantum theory, and if they can play some role to label like coherent states on one side or the other. Then, of course, we would relate this model with full loop quantum gravity. And here again, we mean essentially to the same way in which BV variables are embedded in the full theory context, maybe we can also work out a similar formulation of the full theory such that this relation is possible. And then, of course, we would be interested in to go farther from the space-time point of view. So here is everything limited to spherically symmetric and static black holes, but we would like to go to more physical relevant situation, like now there is ongoing work on gravitational collapse. And coming back to our original motivation for ADS-CFT, we would like to study now higher dimensions and asymptotic ADS spaces. And then after that, we can compare with, for instance, prediction about singularity resolution or argument against it in the holographic holography literature. With this, we are done, and thank you all for your attention.
Questions?
I have a very physical question. So in these space-time diagrams, the quantum-corrected space-time diagrams, there are multiple asymptotic regions. Is that what we would expect physically? So is the black hole changing into a white hole in some other universe? And if so, do we have any idea what this would look like in our universe? It's a very simple question. I don't know if you have any ideas.
If you're asking about how to eventually like have a signature of the white hole side, even if you are on the black hole side, is this what you're asking?
Can you say that again?
So we were thinking about this in the sense of, let's say we are like an observer sitting in the region one, which is the black hole side. If we have any like information about also the rest of the diagram from this side.
That's right. Well, if we will we see the white hole in any way, or that's just in some other universe?
What can be shown is that for instance, the Ricci scalar on this side actually depends on the white hole mass. But let's say the correction to it is really negligible.
Okay.
But also these space times have presumably Cauchy horizons, right? That presumably are unstable. So.
I see. I had another.
So this is somehow an external black hole, and you talk about other effects, like actually the proper collapse of matter are also excluded in our phenomena, like Hawking radiation, which makes everything more complicated. So there's work by, for example, Rovelli, which shows that if you include Hawking radiation, these two regions, one and four, for example, are actually the same universe, for example. So from that point of view, it's probably not, the model itself is just not complete to answer that question.
And then maybe the difference in mass between the black hole and white hole would be accounted for by the Hawking radiation, maybe.
Mm-hmm. The Hawking radiation is not in this picture included, so hard to answer. But in principle, in the interior region where this black hole and white hole interior region, there you have a time-dependent space-time. So in principle, that's how to talk about energy conservation and maybe explain this mismatch of the two masses by saying that they actually might have some particle creation or something in this time-dependent interior region.
I had one other question. So I thought again about this, the action of the residual diffeomorphisms, and I think I understand what's going on. So the what you really had was residual coordinate transformations. And the thing is that residual coordinate transformations are the passive equivalent to diffeomorphisms acting on everything, your dynamical variables as well as the cell. And if you consider instead the active diffeomorphisms acting only on the dynamical variables and you leave the background cell not affected by the diffeomorphisms, you will have a non-trivial action on the phase space. And the condition that the condition of invariance under this action on the phase space will be equivalent to independence of L naught, I think. Would you agree with that? Does that make sense?
So first of all, it's not a condition that the this A, so maybe we can go back to this. So it's essentially an outcome from the computation that this the A here and here are the same. But I'm not completely sure if I understood what you mean by leaving the fiducial cell unchanged.
Yeah.
The background structure, not changing the background structure, because that is essentially what happens here.
Yeah, so the thing is that here you're doing a coordinate transformation, and a coordinate transformation is equivalent to doing applying an active diffeomorphism to all of your structures, your dynamical variables as well as the cell. But if you were to not let the diffeomorphisms act on the fiducial cell, if you were to really treat it as a background structure, then you would get a non-trivial action on the phase space.
Yes, that's true. But then you change the physical size of the fiducial cell.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. So coming back to my previous question regarding the Kressmann scalar. So if I understand the logic, you start with the classical theory, right? Where the only curvature tensor that is non-vanishing is the Weyl tensor. And if I'm not wrong, all the geometrical information will be codified in the Kressmann scalar. And that is why you choose this quantity as a privileged quantity that you polymerize, yes, so that you can get an upper bound when you go to the high curvature region. Yes. However, in the quantum theory, Ricci tensor is not zero anymore. So why should Kressmann scalars will play a prominent role with respect to Ricci components or any other Ricci scalar that you can build, since in the quantum theory, none of them are vanishing?
Yes, but we have to start from the classical theory. So we were using the quantities we have available in the classical theory. Of course, the Ricci scalar is not zero in the quantum theory, yes.
Okay, maybe I can ask Javier's question in a slightly different way. So the model is built from scratch so that the Kressmann scalar is going to get universally bounded, and it is free from the changes in mass, the universal bound is free from that. But what about other curvature invariants? Like, since the quantum theory will have a non-zero Ricci scalar, there are higher order curvature invariants and other curvature invariants of the Riemann tensor. It's not obvious whether they would have the same property.
That is true. So in principle, the other curvature scalars are different from the Kretschmann scale, although a bunch of them are related by several relations. We do not study that in detail here now.
So just to then comment that, in contrast to the model which Abhay, Javier and I had, like, which was based on essentially on the Steger-Barbaro connection, and again a judicious choice motivated by several arguments of what should be the mu naught scheme relevant for that, we checked various curvature invariants and we found that for macroscopic black holes, there were no such problems with the rescalings for any of the curvature invariants.
Yes, we don't have these. So study that for the previous details, and then no problems occurred. Also, we expect this here, and I think we can be sure that these two also not diverge, because essentially there is a minimal bound for the B. So there is this transition surface which has a minimal radius. So we should not expect that the Ricci scalar is actually diverging at the transition surface, and having just one curvature scalar bound, then we expect that this is also true for the others. But you're right, we in principle should check this in details.
Right, the question is not about the divergence. The divergence won't occur. Like, one can simply show that easily. But the question is about the rescaling freedoms and how they affect all other curvature invariants. That is the question here.
In the sense of the relation of the mass, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, no, this has to be the other invariants we have to check for this new model. for the previous one, there were no problems for the relation with the mass. We were fixed. Now for this one, we analyze at the Kirchhoff scale.
Okay, thank you. And I have a last question. So if we want to compare this proposal with other models using the original Astecar-Barbero variables, is it possible to cast or to get how these polymer parameters in that in those models, delta V and delta C, look like in this case?
The backup slides for you. Here is it. As I was saying, it's a very unpeculiar mu bar scheme, and the relation of the polymerization scale are the following. So as you can see, there are now entering the game both the component of the connection and of the end of PB.
Is it possible to give a simple geometrical explanation to this choice, or is at the moment you got that and there is no
emission point of variables point of view? We have not thought about for the moment the interpretation in these terms.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
One more question, if I may.
Go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me? I have a question essentially about the, let's say, physical consistency of the model. Namely, we still have this, what most of the people call infrared regulator, such that the slices, the homogeneous slices in Kantowski sacks are non-compact. And we are, of course, using this, what you call fiducial cell, to make it compact. And then the question is, if we change physical size of this cell, are the results still invariant, or is there a regulator removal limit, which gives some well-defined quantum trajectory for this particular model?
So the metric or the physical quantities we get in the end, these are completely independent of fiducial structures. So if you choose different fiducial...
Well, they are independent on the coordinate size, yes, but regarding physical changes of physical sizes.
This also depends on Carlin, it depends on the integrated version, which is independent of the coordinate system you are using.
Yeah, but I'm not asking about the coordinates.
It's also invariant under changes of the physical size of the fiducial cell. So that's really independent of that. So it's also the physical size of the fiducial cell.
Really? Okay. All right. No more questions.
Any others? Okay. Let's thank the speaker again.